This podcast episode has a CC by SA 4.0 license. This license requires that reusers give credit to the creator. It allows reusers to distribute, remix, adapt, and build upon the material in any medium or format, even for commercial purposes. If others remix, adapt, or build upon the material, they must license the modified material under identical terms. Thank you. Hello, this is the CoLab podcast. I am Charlie Wilson. I work as the communications officer for the International Permaculture CoLab. Today I have a very special guest. I'm very looking forward to this interview. So please can you introduce yourself?
Hi. My name is Clement Matomason from Ghana, and I'm working with Dream Village Ghana, a regenerative agriculture space where we train young people into developing regenerative agriculture methods, but it's also just a space for people who are enthusiastic about agriculture, permaculture, design, and things related to protecting the environment generally. So I'm glad to be here and honored to meet your audience as well.
Yes, great. Thank you. So can you tell me, what is the Dream Village project and how did it come about? How did it start?
Yeah, so Dream Village actually started back in 2006. I was looking for purpose, basically. And I grew up on the streets and a lot of people helped me to become who I am. So I was really thinking, what's my purpose in life? With all the adventures and stuff that I went through, how can I give back to the society? And then I realized there was, if I had my experience, people helped me. You know, there's a proverb in Africa that says, it takes a village to raise a child. Mm-hmm. So I was thinking, my village was in so many scattered places. So how do I make this village smaller so that more people can come to a space and find inspiration? And so I thought about this, creating this space where the older generation can share their knowledge with the new generation so that they don't have to restart all over every time they want to build something. So I visualized this idea on a wall. And since then, I've been trying to start it. I started it in more than four places. All the time it collapsed because I didn't have the right support. I didn't have the, you know, my mind was still not so matured to do that. So every time I started it, something happened and it didn't really go well. And then I had to restart all over again. But I was passionate about it. I knew that was the right thing to do. But, you know, you normally would start it in a place where it's so isolated and remote that it was not easy for people to reach or to get the right mindset. And also, I wasn't really well equipped to be able to provide the training because majority of the kind of training I wanted to offer was specifically regenerative agriculture. But the conventional schools weren't training people in regenerative agriculture. So you wouldn't find the right trainers. Always it was the people who were interested in using chemicals, you know, fertilizers, blah, blah, blah. And that I knew that was not what I wanted to do. But I also didn't have the skills to accomplish that. So I started looking for ways to accomplish that by working with local communities and farmers. And over time, yeah, over several attempts, eventually I was able to start it up in one location back in 2016. Basically, it was actually accidental. I went to this community to help them find water because they were having water challenges. Then I provided the water, but the way of pumping the water for the community, I had to use a generator. Mm. And at that time, I was living in a bigger city. And I just went to this community to provide them water. Now, what happened was that when we were pumping this water for the community, we had to use a generator in the middle of the night so that in the daytime, the community can get water. So we assigned some of the people to do it. But some of them were afraid. They were having these fears of being attacked by some mysterious spirits or something like that. And so they wouldn't do the pumping in the night. They would wait till the morning when everybody was coming for water to also pump, and it was putting stress on the machine. So I said, no, we pump in the night. And they went, no, we are too afraid to do that. So I will just go there with my car, park it, and then pump the water throughout the night. And then in the morning, they have water, just to demonstrate to them it's possible and there's not no spirit or whatever coming to attack you. Now, during that process, normally I would just bring foodstuffs and stuff and set up fire. And then I would just spend the night, playing music and pumping and just having fun. And a lot of young people started coming around. So they will come around to also sit around the fire with me. We were telling stories. I will give them food, snacks, and stuff like that. And all of a sudden, I had all these young people there who were just coming to entertain themselves. Like, well, let's put it to use. We started growing vegetables. We started building some gardens. And all of a sudden, it became a small village. And then so sometimes I would go to the city, visit my family. And then most part of the time, I would come to the village. And I thought, well, all these young people, what do? You train them. We bring the skills. And all of a sudden, the same idea that I had to build a few years ago, all of a sudden started taking place. And then it started growing from there. And then people started coming. The community people started helping. They would come in the night and tell stories, old people, all this. And all of a sudden, this became a thriving community. And that's how Dream Village eventually became possible in this location.
Amazing. Oh, it's great that you kept going and then it just happened so magically. And
exactly.
Oh, it's wonderful. So maybe you can tell me, what does life look like in this village? What do people do? How do they spend their days?
Yeah, so what mainly happened was that once we started building structures, more and more young people were coming who were like, okay, I want to raise animals, I want to become a journalist, and these are people that the formal education system booted them out because maybe they failed one subject or they were not doing so well in terms of the formal education and they were kicked out. But the entire of this area, most of them are not skilled. So a lot of these young guys were put through school, formal school. They didn't learn the trade of their fathers and their parents. They just went through the formal school. They came out, no skill. So they are really in the middle and not knowing what to do. So I thought, okay, let's provide skill training first. So we started doing entrepreneurship skills training, helping them to know how to start up a business, how to build up a business, how to manage it. And then started introducing some digital tools, how to use it to promote on social media, how to build right from how, what is your business and how do you start it? And then we started inviting experts in those fields. So if we see someone who is good in poultry farming, for instance, and there is a young person who is passionate about it, we invite someone from in that space. And then we all learn. And then, so before we, you knew it, it was, we will go to the farm, we will do the garden, we will pump the water, we'll provide, and we're learning about so many things because so many people came with different ideas of what they wanted to do. In fact, we learned even about journalism, how to publish documents and stuff like this. So because so many people, once people's basic needs are met and they move out of survival mode, then they start to dream really crazy, And because we had food provided there, we have some basic accommodation that they could sleep and wake up in the same space. Young people that were far away who didn't know what to do with their life started coming here. And then once they came, you had this all these ideas coming in. And with the ideas also came a lot of power, manpower, labor, skills. And then all of a sudden, you started learning about things and, and so we wake up in the daytime. The first thing we did was going to the farm because that was our basic source of support because the farm provided all the food. We go there and then at about nine, normally we go very early. By six, we are already in the farm. Nine, in Ghana, it starts getting very hot in the daytime. So once it starts getting hot, we come home. And then we go into the classroom where we are learning about entrepreneurship skills. We are learning about marketing, branding, things like that. And I brought in some old computers. And so because of that, we could also connect to the internet and start looking out. So even when we do not have a trainer, we will go to like online Harvard website to learn about business modeling and marketing. We will go to websites or YouTube channels that were teaching people about permaculture and stuff like this. So even when we didn't have trainers, we could just use the power of the internet and then leverage on that to provide training. We did soap making. Yeah, it was just exciting periods. You know, wow. Whatever idea somebody has, okay, let's go online. Let's see if we can find it and let's try to do it. And that is how come Green Village thrived throughout this period.
Ah, it's amazing. Very inspiring.
Yes, it is.
So you're teaching and learning, like, sounds like a really diverse syllabus.
Definitely.
Lots of different things. So not just the permaculture, also all of the branding. Yeah, these things.
Yeah, yes. I mean, if you are designing permaculture and you cannot brand yourself, if you cannot sell what you're doing, then in the end, you're just doing a homestead in your own corner. You know, so it's important for them to find the tools where they can see, how do we put it out there? How do I make my voice heard? How do I continue? Because permaculture is a continuous learning effect. So if you need to find ways to leverage on what other people are doing, and you don't have to make the same mistakes. So it's a diverse world, and agriculture in general is really a diverse environment. You need to be constantly growing yourself, studying the environment, studying what other people are doing and failing, and then avoiding those same mistakes so that you can have a bit more success. And especially a lot of young people who do not have a room for so much mistakes, our space becomes like a safe spot. You know, you can make the mistake there because nobody's going to query you. And so that makes it even much more interesting.
Great. Amazing. So how many people do you think are living in the village, going to the schools?
So officially, our training program caters for 20 people annually every year. But we also provide services for the agric offices around us. So they come there for their post-harvest training, their other kinds of training they come there for. We also connect with the local schools. So we do a lot of extension work. In a day, we have sometimes 200, 300 people coming in and out, especially if we have students from the senior high schools coming there to learn about vegetable production or even how to set up irrigation and stuff like that. So it eventually became a very busy place. We also focus a lot of energy in training smallholder farmers how to adopt regenerative methods. So like teaching them how to do composting, teaching them how to use organic pest control, because especially saving seeds. We are very strong on saving seeds and also using organic fertilizers and chemicals. So we want to encourage them. It's not just enough to tell farmers, oh, stop using chemicals, and you have to give them solutions, alternatives. So we also gather a lot of farmers, especially women groups, and then we help them to learn how to build compost, show them how to use neem oil as pest control and stuff like that.
Right.
So it cannot be measured in terms of a specific number, but it changes. Sometimes you have 200, sometimes you only have our student group that are there. But on average, we were having close to 30 people, including the staff within the space.
Okay, great. So it's like you have your core group, but then there's lots of other people involved on the edges.
Exactly,
Amazing. And I wonder what kind of structures you have there, like what kind of buildings, and was it the volunteers who built them, or did you get people in? How did you do it?
Yeah, so our focus has always been focused on sustainable materials in terms of building. So we, in the local context, it is always people know how to easily build with mud. And then they roof it with the grass. So the thatch buildings. Now, through my research, I found out that especially for the thatch roofing, which we built a couple of them together with the students, we realized that every year you have to remove the grass and the wood and then replace them.
Ah.
Every year you have to remove that because, yeah, obviously we have a lot of termites, and because we are not really treating them with chemicals, you're constantly having this infestation into it's like basically mulching a building. That's what it is, you know.
Yeah.
So we realized that that kind of building, it's nice and cool, but on the long run, it's not sustainable because you have to constantly cut trees to re-roof and redo all these buildings at least every 2 years. So we started researching and we found the Nubian vaults. The Nubian vault is an architecture system mainly in the Egyptians and Moroccan. You can find Nubian vaults around the Israel and all those places. So we decided to, because our people were already building with mud, so it's not new, something new. The only thing is how to build the technique of the dome to do the roofing. So we brought in friends, other guys. We started researching and we found people who were